As we march towards Rosh Chodesh Elul this week and our thoughts turn to Tshuva, we read a particularly apt pasuk in Parshas Re'eh, which says as follows: Moshe warns Bnei Israel, "Re'eh anochi notzen lefneichem hayom bracha uklala. Behold, I'm placing before you today, Bnei Israel, the option of blessing, uklala, and curse." Right? You could turn towards avodah zarah, which brings only curse, or you could turn towards Hashem, service of Hashem, which brings only bracha. And he is even more explicit in his strong warning in a few prakim when he elaborates, Re'eina sati lefanecha hayom es hachayim, es hatov, es hamavet, es hara. And Moshe Rabbeinu tells us there's life and there's death that's before you. There's blessing and curse. Uvacharta v'chayim, you gotta choose life in order that you and your children shall live. And what does it mean to choose life, to choose goodness and blessing? It means love Hashem, listen to Him, cling to Him, says Moshe Rabbeinu, and this will play out as not doing avodah zarah. But avodah zarah is not the only way to love Hashem and cling to Him. This is really a much broader exhortation that Moshe Rabbeinu is offering to Bnei Israel than simply avoid avodah zarah. To love Hashem is a constant way of life, and uvacharta v'chayim, choosing life, is not as simple as Moshe would have us think. It is not as simple as choose a red pill or a blue pill, one from this column, one from that column. It's not one choice and done, but rather it's a constant, ongoing responsibility on the part of every single human to keep uvacharta v'chayim, to keep making the correct choices, to work on ourselves, to keep the mitzvos, to perfect our midos, be our best selves, and keeping a little better than we were yesterday. And while to Moshe Rabbeinu, this might sound as simple as choose from this column or from that column, for us, we know that this is a tremendous and ongoing responsibility. And the truth is, any time that we take on something, we take on a project, which is going to be not only extremely significant, but ongoing, we generally seek serious training. If we're going to drive and we plan to drive for more or less the rest of our lives, Amir Tashem, so we say, okay, I'm going to attend driver's ed. If we say, I'm going to go into a certain career, I want to become an engineer. Well, I'm going to go for schooling to become an engineer. I'm going to study the philosophy behind it. I'm going to study how to do it, how it works, when to do what. I'm going to get all the training and coaching that I can, and hopefully attend classes, hopefully even get a mentor, because I want to be the best at that important responsibility that I possibly can. Well, tshuva and perfection is, if it's choosing life, it seems that this could be seen to be overall the point of human existence. And if it's ongoing, this is the point of human existence to constantly vachar tevachayim, then you would think that we would seek significant training in this area. But really, as you flip through Tanakh, we find Navi after Navi coming to say, this specific action, that specific action, yes, you're going to want to go for that. But what we do not see so quickly is a Navi telling us, by the way, this process of tshuva is not as simple as just knowing what to do and what not to do, but it entails a lot of how to, when to, why to. How do you go about that? Let me walk you through the process. So what we would desperately need is perhaps a tshuva coach, someone to show us what the process is about, what it should look like, and even ideally how it's received on the other end. If I'm looking for information regarding a process which is important to me, let's say I'm learning about the application process for a high school, I'm going to look at, okay, so when do I need to apply? Why am I applying to more than one place? What's the idea behind it? Okay, do you have any tricks? What should I include in my essay or my interview? What should I maybe leave out? And then after I have all my tricks and my tips and my do's and do nots, then I would want to know what's going to happen behind the door in the admissions office. What are they going to say? Oh, okay, that's good enough. I'll accept it. But this one I'm going to throw out. So ideally, I would love to hear a coach, somebody with insight who could train me throughout the philosophy behind tshuva, some tips and tricks and what the process should look like as it's happening. And finally, what counts, what doesn't count, right? I want to get my chulas through the door. What is good enough? So while the Nevi'im themselves don't seem to specifically address this, if we look carefully, we'll find that Hashem personally gives us, offers a vicarious crash course in tshuva by really training, coaching three individuals through one aspect or one point in the process. These three individuals are Kayin, with the background, Eliyahu Hanavi, with the how to, what the process looks like, and finally, Yonah, with what is good enough. So we're going to begin with Kayin. At the beginning of humanity's existence, towards the very beginning, Hashem is going to pop in and have a personal Musar shmooze with Kayin. So let's look together at a familiar story to see the back, a little bit of the philosophy of truth. Okay, so Hashem mentoring Kayin. In Bereishis, Perek Dalet Pasuk Gimel, it says as follows: Vayihi miketz yamim, and it was after some time, Vayaveh Kayin mipri ha'adamah minchal Hashem. Kayin brings from the fruit of the ground an offering for Hashem. The Hevel hevi gam hu, and Hevel also brings an offering, mibuchoros tzono, from the best of his flocks, umichalveihem, from their fats, vayishah Hashem el Hevel ve'el minchaso. And Hashem turns to Hevel and to his offering. El Kain v'el minchaso, but to Kain and his offering, lo sha'a. Hashem does not turn and accept Kain or his offering. Vayichar leKain me'od, and Kain gets very upset. Vayipluf panav, and his face falls. He feels down. He feels sad. So now Hashem comes in. Vayomer Hashem al Kain. Hashem says to him, Lama charalach? Hashem notes that there are two different emotions that Kayin is experiencing here. First, Hashem addresses the first one. He says, "Why are you angry? V'lama naflu fanecha, and why has your face fallen in sadness? Why are you dejected? Hello, behold, is it not the case that im teitiv se'eis, if you improve, there will be uplift? V'im lo si'tiv. But if you do not improve, lepesach chatas rovetz, at the entrance, sin crouches. Ve'elecha teshukaso, and sin wants you. Va'atatim sholbo, but you can rule over it. So it's interesting here that usually you would have, well, if you do this, good, and if not, you will be wiped off the face of the planet. You will be kicked out of the land. You will be killed. But no, Hashem actually speaks to him about the moral consequences if he doesn't work on himself. He says, if you don't improve, sin is there. Be warned. Not about the punishment, but what is going to happen next? Why must you improve yourself? Because sin is right there crouching. It wants you, but you could do this kind. So let's look through a couple of the mafarshim who parse out the meaning of this little Musar Shmuz, the first ever Musar Shmuz. So Sfarno says as follows: Lama charalach, why are you upset? He explains, what do you mean, why are you upset? We know why he's upset, right? Obviously he's upset because he came up with the idea of offering this carbon. His is not accepted. And then the copycat Hevel's was. What do you mean, why is he upset? Isn't that reasonable? But why are you upset? Because, says Sfarno, he's saying, Lama kanisa ba'achacha? Why are you jealous of your brother? Kedoeg al shekibalti karbano beratzon. It seems like you're worried that I just felt like accepting his carbon. Hine lohayaze ratzon pashut. This wasn't a whim. Oshalokadin, it wasn't unfair. So this is acknowledging sometimes when things are not going right for us, we do not accept the blame. We pass the blame. We say, well, circumstances are just unfair, and we try to play the victim. Instead of working on ourselves and looking inwards, we say, oh, that one shouldn't have this one shouldn't have said that, right? We look around and we see why everything around us is wrong and unfair. But no, don't be angry. Don't look at why is this happening to me? Why is this unfair? Just say to yourself, I'm going to keep my eyes on my own plate. And continuing, vilamana flufanecha, why are you sad and dejected? Right? The next piece of advice Hashem offers is don't sulk. Why? If there is for something that's wrong, if there's a way to fix it, it's not worth being pained al masha avar, over what has already passed. Rather, it's worth it to just try to achieve a tikkun, something to fix the future. Let me improve it going forward. So Hashem says, number one was stop looking around, casting blame, or looking at what other people's situations. Look inward and don't say, oh, me, I guess if it's really about me, then I guess I'm a failure. No. Why don't you look at what you could do differently for tomorrow? So tomorrow you will be accepted. And Sfarna continues explaining, Halo im teitiv atzmacha. He says, behold, if you improve, not your carbon, not give a better carbon, but improve yourself. This is a more holistic, a more systemic sort of tshuva and improvement that Hashem is looking for. You try to not do a little better, try to be one bit better. B'tishtadel hiyot kamatala rotzon. You try to also be someone who will please Hashem. Halo im teitiv, because if you do improve yourself, said Ace, there will be uplift. Not there might be, there will be. Rom hamalavahitz naseh rovetz lefanacha. Just as sin is crouching there, well, all these possibilities of you are rising upward and upward are crouching right there too. They're just waiting. Ace, your potential is waiting, crouching there for you to climb closer and closer to Hashem, to be better and better. Sforno continues, ve'elecha teshukah. So, however, sin is also crouching there. And it is constant. The rabbis tell us that it is rovates. Not it was crouching, it is in the infinitive, it is crouching because it's constant, just like Chazal say. Yitzo shall adam miskaber alav b'chol yom. A person's evil inclination overpowers him, tries to get on top of us every single day. It's constant. So we know, don't look at my friend. It doesn't matter what's happening around me, right? Think of my locus of control has self-improvement. I shouldn't look backward, look forward. And it's constant. This is not an occasional thing. This is every waking moment. Well, we might get a little bit burnt out. This sounds like a big project that we are being told to take on by Hashem and by Moshe Rabbeinu. This is a very big project. So you might say, whoa, I can't do the constant pushing, pushing, pushing. I'm going to get tired. Maybe I'll just stand still. What if I say I won't go up, but I won't go down? So the Ben Ish Chai tells us, Al tachshov shelo titnaseh od levad, v'tisha'er b'madrigosecha. Don't think you could just stand still and stay in your place on your level. Efes lepesach chatas rovet. Rather, sin is crouching. It's going to overcome you if you're not pushing forward, right? So if it's the old escalator, Michelle, if you're not going up, you're going down. And Radak tells us, this sounds so difficult. I don't even get it to take a break. I can't say it's too much for me to have constant vigilance. So Radak explains, don't worry too much because Hashem promises you, atatim shovel. You could do it. What do you mean I could do it? Who says I can do it? And the answer is, biatcha lahitkomimalav. You have the potential to rise above the Yetzer Hara and control it. How? B'tzelem Elokim. That's what it means when Hashem gave us, created us in the image of God. He gave us this spark, this ability to overcome our Yetzer Hara. Chazal explain, based on a pasuk in Tehillim, HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ozro, Eino Yachol, Sheh, sorry, Ve'il Malei HaKadosh Baruch Hu Ozro. Were it not that Hashem was helping a person against the Yetzer Hara, Eino Yacholo, he would not be able to overcome it. Shneemar, it says, Hashem lo yazvenu biyado, as Tehillim says, Hashem's not going to leave you in the hands of Yetzer Hara. If we try, if we say, oh my gosh, Hashem, I really need help. I need help controlling my impulse to speak lashon hara. So Hashem is going to make it get a little easier. Hashem's going to be on our side through our Tehillim Elokim and help us to overcome. If we just try, we're going to make progress. Radak explains, this is exactly what Moshe Rabbeinu was referring to when he says, "Hinei natati lefanecha es ha-chayim ve-es ha-tov. Behold, I've placed before you life and good, ve-es ha-ra, and death and evil. Uvachar tevachayim." You got to choose life. What does he mean? He means can choose life by making the right choices, working on ourselves to do tshuva. This is what Hashem is right now appearing to Kayin to tell him. There's this little thing called Bechira Chavshes. And this thing is going to enable you, when you turn to Hashem, to work on your Yetzer Hara and controlling it because it is constantly on our case. And Radak adds, by the way, the whole reason that Vayomer Hashem, that Hashem spoke to Kayin in this instance is Hayaha Dibur Imok Hideliyasro. Hashem speaking to him to give him mussar, to give him rebuke. Ula hoshiva lamutav, to return him to the good. Ula lamdu derech tshuva. Hashem's coming to teach Kayin the ways of tshuva, not just for him. Lo, for him, ula dor sabai. And for all the generations to come. Ki ha'chote yeshlo kapara. That sinner has a way to fix himself, to atone, im yashuv b'tshuva shleima, if he just simply will return with complete tshuva. So Moshe Rabbeinu had not yet told him, there's life, there's death, there's goodness and evil, choose good. But Hashem came even before Moshe Rabbeinu was there to tell Kayin, you have free will. It is there, it is constant. But if you keep your eyes on your own plate, you keep your eyes forwards towards constantly trying to push yourself, and you turn to me, Hashem, and ask for help. You can do this, Kayin. And we're supposed to learn from this background that Hashem coached him through in order to take the same messages for ourselves. But we still need to know. I understand. Okay, so that's how tshuva works. If you're not going up, you're going down. You have two strong possibilities constantly crouching in the doorway. And if you turn to Hashem and you work on it, you can improve and improve. But it's not a very easy process. And it is draining and it is constant. So what we need is for our same mentor, our same coach, to help us to hack the process. We want to see what does it look like when you go through this process. We need a little mentoring and to see, okay, what's an example? How am I going to feel? What am I going to experience? What are some tips and tricks to push along? So we have an instance where an Hashem coaches Eliyahu Hanavi, which is incredible because Hashem chooses to coach the coach. Eliyahu Hanavi, of all the Nevi'im, is perhaps the strongest pusher of the tshuva process. He is tough as nails. And as opposed to the other Nevi'im, it seems like he is pushing tshuva of his own volition. When he summons a famine, there's no indication that Hashem commanded him to do so. Rather, he says, this is not good enough, B'nai Yisrael, you could do better. You got to do better. I'm going to take away rain until you improve yourselves. So he is a tshuva coach. And to see that even the tshuva coach might have a hard time perfecting himself and affecting transformative systemic change in himself is going to hopefully offer us a lot of insight. So what's cool about both the Eliyahu Hanavi story and the story of Yonah is both of these stories actually offer us a tshuva story of an individual, or a mass tshuva story, I should say, which is folded within the tshuva story of an individual. So first, we're going to see with both of them, there's a story where they're pushing the larger group to do tshuva, and finally, it seems they are successful. And then it should be story is over, happy ending. But the music keeps rolling, and then we follow the Navi himself, each respective Navi, as he goes through some tough times, and Hashem comes to speak to him personally about it. So very interesting pattern, and there's more patterns also to be found within their stories. And we're going to begin with Eliyahu Hanavi. So This Eliyahu's story really starts, or at least we are going to dive in at the end of perhaps the most climactic moment of Eliyahu's life, certainly of his prophetic life, wherein he had just finished a 3-year process of trying to push B'nai Yisrael towards tshuva. And as we said, of course, he took away water. And as Eliyahu took away water, we're going to see certain hints that Eliyahu was being a tiny bit cruel, we might say, a little bit harsh, and perhaps even harsher than Hashem would have wanted with B'nai Yisrael in his efforts to push them. And I guess as bad cop, he is pushing them towards tshuva, but there's going to be a lot of damage along the way. So Hashem is not too happy, we might find, with Eliyahu and Eliyahu's personal shift over the process. So it starts out when he took away water and he has to run and hide by Nachal Krit, by the river. He's going to drink from the river. And Hashem says, I'm going to send you ravens to offer you food. And he does. He sits there with and he's fed for a year by ravens. And eventually he watches as the bugs and the bees all die as the water dries up and there's nothing left for them to feed on. And Hashem sends him to Tsarfat to live with a widow and an orphan and to see all the human suffering with his own eyes personally, as they're still suffering from a major, major drought. And he meets a widow and orphan, right? The most vulnerable of society who are on the brink of death. And no doubt he sees the rest of the city is succumbing to the famine and passing away. And finally, he goes on like this for 2 years until we recall the boy passes away. Eliyahu asks Hashem to bring the boy back to life. Hashem does, but Hashem says, now I'm going to bring water. I'm bringing rain back. So if there's anything you got to do before, if you want to wrap up any business, now's the time. So Eliyahu goes, he shows up finally to King Ahav, and he says, okay, we're going to have a big showdown at Har Carmel. Call the evil Baal prophets, call all B'nai Israel. There's going to be a big showdown, and we're going to see if Hashem is the real God or Baal, and we're going to finish this once and for all. And of course, we know that all B'nai Israel come to watch, all Yisrael, I should say, the 10 tribes come to watch, and Eliyahu successfully shows that Baal is completely fake. There's nobody there to answer their pleas. And Eliyahu now asks Hashem to send down a fire and consume the korban that he's offering for Hashem. And of course, Hashem does. When B'nai Yisrael see it and they recognize, oh my goodness, Hashem is the real deal, they fall to their knees and they have this blinding moment of recognition of Hashem. They say, oh my gosh, Hashem, hu Elokim, Hashem is the real God, Hashem is the real God. And they've done tshuva. And they've reconnected with Hashem, and it's so beautiful. Eliyahu's on a high, and he kills out the false prophets, and he prays to Hashem to bring rain now. He escorts the king all the way back home. He thinks this is the beginning of a new era for B'nai Yisrael. And he is on an all-time high. Eliyahu is just so happy and grateful, and he's overjoyed. And this is where we're going to start inside our source over here in Perek Yud Tes. Well, Ahav, King Ahav gets home and he brings the report to his evil wife, Izebel. Vayeged Ahav le'Izebel, eskol asher asa Eliyahu. So Ahav tells his wife about what happened at work today. He says everything that Eliyahu did at Har Carmel. Ve'eskol asher harag, eskol neviim b'charav, and all about how, and by the way, Eliyahu did kill all of your favorites, all those false prophets by sword. Vatishlach Izebel malach, and Izebel sends a messenger, El Eliyahu Lemor, to Eliyahu, saying as follows: Ko yasun Elohim vecho yosifun, so shall the gods do, and so shall they continue, which is an oath. Ki ke'es machar asimus nafshacha, by this time tomorrow, I'm gonna make you as dead as any of them. Why? Because sure, you got B'nai Yisrael, got all 10 tribes to fall to their knees and say, oh, Hashem is God, and they're all on your side. Today, give me 24 hours, and they'll be back serving Avodah Zarah just as good as ever. And then I am taking you down, Eliyahu, you're a dead man. Well, imagine what this feels like to Eliyahu. Pasuk Gimel, Vayar. Oh, he sees it. Vayakam yetzav vayilech al nashu, he flees for his life. Vayavo be'er sheva asher le'Yehuda, and he runs to Be'er Sheva and Yehuda. Vayanachas na'ar osham, and he drops off his na'ar. He's done with him. He doesn't need a helper lad anymore. We got to see why. Pasuk Dalet, v'hu halach b'midbar derech yom, he walks a day's journey into the desert. Vayavo v'yishev tachas rosem achad, and he goes and he sits under a specific kind of bush. Vayish'al es nafsho lamus, and he begs for his soul to die. Vayomer, and he says to Hashem, Rava ta Hashem, it's too much now, Hashem, enough. Kach nafshi, take my soul. Ki lo tov anochi me'avosai, I know better than my forefathers. Vayishkav, he lies down. Vayishan, and he goes to sleep. It doesn't say Vayishan immediately. It doesn't say, and he went to sleep. Vayishkav, he lies down. He's trying to go to sleep, and sure enough, he does go to sleep. Tachat rotem echad, beneath, again beneath this tree. Vehineze malach nogebo, and then, whoa, and then this, some angel is touching his, tapping on him. Vayomer lo, he says to him, kum, get up. Echol, eat. Ve'abetz Eliyahu looks, ve'hinei Rosh Hashav, and behold, by his head, ugas ritzafim ve'tzapachas mayim, is a cake that was baked on coals, ve'tzapachas mayim, and a flask of water. Ve'yochol ve'yesh, he eats and he drinks, ve'yashav, he returns, ve'yashkav, lies right back down. Pasuk Zayin, ve'yashav malach Hashem shenis, and the messenger from Hashem, the angel from Hashem, returns again, ve'yigabo, and he touches him. Why do we need to know that? Vayomer, and he says, kum echol. Wouldn't it be enough if we just said, eat, get up, and eat? Ki rav mincha haderech. And this time he says, why? Because the journey is far before you. Vayakam vayochal vayishteh. So he gets up and he eats and he drinks and he goes vayelech bakoch achila hahi, and he goes on the power of from on the fuel from that eating. Arba'im yom va'arba'im laila. For 40 days and 40 nights. That should ring a bell, right? Ring any bells? All the way to where? Ad har Elohim Chorev. Now, if it said Chorev, who knows what Chorev is? We know what Chorev is. We know that Chorev is Har Sinai. So if Chorev is Har Sinai, what does it mean to say to the mountain of God? We know that Chorev is the mountain of God. Vayavo sham elamara, he comes there to the cave. Vayilin sham. And you would think, oh my gosh, he's coming to it. To shul, what do you do when you get to shul? You daven, right? He's coming to the shul of all shuls, to the special cave on the mountain of Hashem. He goes to sleep. Vehinei dvar Hashem elav, and Hashem's word comes to him. Vayomer lo, and he says to him, Malacha po Eliyahu, what are you doing here, Eliyahu? Well, Hashem knows what he's doing there, right? It's a little strange that Hashem is asking. It's a rhetorical question. But he answers it as though it's not a rhetorical question. But Yomar, and he says, Kano kanesi la Hashem elokei tzvakos, I have been so zealous for Hashem, Lord of the hosts, ki azvu vrischa b'nei Yisrael, because b'nei Yisrael have left your treaty. They've abandoned your treaty. As mizbechosecha harasu, they destroyed your altars. Ve'esneviyecha hargu b'charev, and they killed your prophets by sword. He's not blaming it on Izevo, by the way. He's blaming it on Bnei Yisrael, who he felt didn't jump in and protect them. Perhaps were even complicit in killing them. And I remain alone. And now they're after me. They're trying to kill me. Didn't even start yet, but he knows it's going to happen. Vayomer, so Hashem says to him, say, go out. Va'amarata v'har lifnei Hashem, stand by the mountain before Hashem. It's interesting that he's saying go out, because if he said stand by the mountain, that would be obvious, yes, to go. But he goes out, v'hineh Hashem, behold, Hashem is over passing, v'ruach gedola v'chazak mefarek harim. And there's this huge wind, it's so strong, it's breaking apart mountains, and it's shattering rocks, v'hineh Hashem, before Hashem, lo v'ruach Hashem, but Hashem is not in that wind. And then after that wind, Ra'ash, there's an earthquake. Lo v'ra'ash Hashem, but Hashem is not in that earthquake. V'achar ha-ra'ash, Ish. And then, in case that wasn't frightening enough, after the earthquake, there's this huge fire. Lo v'esh Hashem, but Hashem is not in the fire. V'achar ha-esh, and after the fire, Kol demama daga. A thin, still voice. Vayehi, and it was Kishmo Eliyahu, when Eliyahu hears that thin, still voice, Vayalet Panav Badra, so he covers his face in his mantle. Vayetze, he goes out, Vayamod Pesach HaMar, he stands by the entrance to the cave. Vehinei Elav Kol, and behold, a voice comes to him. Vayomer, and what does Hashem say after all the show and tell? Hashem repeats himself verbatim. Vayomer Malacha fo Eliyahu. Now, if Hashem is repeating verbatim the same question after Eliyahu answered, let alone after show and tell, we'd expect a different response, right? But sure enough, Eliyahu responds verbatim. Vayomer kanoka nesi la Hashem elokei tzvakos. Right, I've been so zealous for Hashem, the Lord of the hosts. They left your treaty. B'nai Israel left your treaty. They destroyed your altars. They killed your prophets by sword, and I'm alone. And now they're trying to kill me. So Hashem, you could almost hear Hashem sigh, right? Vayomer Hashem elav, and now Hashem says to him, "Lich, go, shuv ledarkecha, return upon your path, midbara demosek." Go towards the desert to Damascus. Uvata, and you're going to go and you're going to anoint Hazael, king of Aram, and you're going to anoint someone to destroy Yehu, to destroy the royal family of Bnei Israel, and you're going to anoint Elisha to take over for you. Well, let's look at what the Mefarshim have to say here. They're going to give us a little bit insight into Eliyahu's personal journey. So Malbim says as follows. First, when Eliyahu first started this process of convincing Bnei Israel to do tshuva through calling down, through summoning a tremendous heavy famine upon them, Hashem sent the bread through ravens. Well, look what Malbim says. He's mean parnasa so al yidei orbim. Hashem arranged for supplying for Eliyahu through ravens. Why? Shehem achzarim b'tifam, because they are cruel by nature. Leman yizkor, in order that Eliyahu should remember, he should get the message, and he should realize, oh, they are cruel. Maybe I'm being a little bit cruel to Bnei Yisrael by summoning this famine, which is going to kill them. Maybe it'll help some people do tshuva, but a lot of people are going to die. Going to crack a lot of eggs to make the omelet. Well, Abarbanel says, from the time that Eliyahu finally gets to Har Carmel, right, by the big showdown, he starts to recognize, oh, I think maybe Hashem is not as with me as I had hoped or as I'm used to. Abarbanel says as follows. Re'e atzmo basakana, he sees that he's in danger. B'halach l'malei dal nafsho. Eventually, when Ezevel turns to him, he flees for his life. Why? Because according to what Abarbanel explains, he realizes, lo ba'ahu dibor eloki klal. He had not received any messages, no phone calls from Hashem. Lo b'har Carmel, not during the whole showdown at Har Carmel, v'lo acharav, nor after it as he's leaving Har Carmel. And he's like, uh-oh, why is Hashem not calling? And yihyeh peirush hakasuv shera'a Eliyahu, the meaning of the Torah is telling us that Eliyahu recognized Shehashem sar me'alav, Hashem had moved from upon him. V'lo diber lo klal, Hashem's not talking to him. Well, if the line is cut off between Hashem and Eliyahu, then he is in danger if Yizevel's off after him. So he has to flee for his life. So in case he missed the sign of the ravens, in case he missed the first clue that, ooh, not all was so well with him, he starts to realize, people aren't relating to me exactly as they used to. Something's happening. Maybe I have to think of what's wrong. Something's going on with me, perhaps. Well, Malbim tells us that his journey, when it says that he runs for his life, he's fleeing for his life, it uses an interesting lashon. It says he runs lenafsho. So we translated that as for his life, but But over here, it's being explained by Malbim in a different manner. He explains it as for his soul. What do you mean he was running for his soul? So Malbim explains to us, "Vayilech et el nafsho." He's running. He's going for his soul. Ki Eliyahu haya mitkoded rov yamav. Because this Eliyahu Hanavi, he was a loner. Most of his life, he was staying by himself, the osik b'shlemus atzmo, and he was working on perfecting himself, his character, l'hashlemus nafsho, to try to work on his neshama. Rapa eset tzorich. But at the time of need, when Hashem calls him in, he realizes Bnei Yisrael are struggling. Hayanavi shaluach la'am. As a prophet, he's like, ooh, okay, I'm on mission. I guess I'm on call for the nation. So his focus changed from self-perfection to perfection of the nation. Va'achar, and then after he sees shekol ha'nifla'os she'asa, that all the miracles, the crazy, crazy, spectacular things he did, lo pa'alu. They didn't work because these devils, right, they're not going to stick. Ra'ah, he recognized, ki ein lo esek la'hashlim asa'am. He's like, what am I bothering with trying to help the nation perfect themselves? U'lechachan, therefore come. Therefore he gets up. He goes back on the journey of self-perfection, fixing his own soul. But that's a harder journey. Rabag says as follows. Rabag gives us a little bit of clarity in terms of the conversation between Hashem and Eliyahu. He says, behold, Hashem spoke to him. And suddenly, when Eliyahu speaks very, very toughly about Bnei Israel, they're the worst because of X and Y and Z. Hashem calls him out for a little show and tell. Why does Hashem give this show and tell? So everyone says, because Hashem is saying you don't have to come like a crazy earthquake or a harsh fire or a breaking wind. You could be gentle. Gentle sometimes works. Hashem can be gentle. You could be gentle too. But Ralbag has a different approach. Ralbag says, it's as if Hashem says, well, let's see. What if I can shake him out of it? And help him recognize, I want him to also be able to lean into the softy, into his more gentle sides. So Hashem says, what if I scare him into it? So Hashem sends a huge destructive wind and a devastating earthquake and a huge fire. And Hashem hopes that maybe Eliyahu is going to think, oh dear, I called down punishment upon Bnei Yisrael. It looks like there's fire now attacking them. It looks like there's earthquake and horror is happening to them, right? And maybe it would seem to him, Hashem has already done this to Bnei Yisrael. Maybe Eliyahu now is going to start to plead for Bnei Yisrael. No, wait, wait, save my people, take care of them. I know they've sinned, but take care of them. Hashem wants him to be patient, to be a little more gentle towards Bnei Yisrael. And it seems Rov Ka'as Eliyahu, out of the huge anger of Eliyahu on the heavy, heavy sins of Bnei Yisrael, al Rov Chatas Yisrael, lo sama libo. He didn't take it to heart, lahavinas dvar hamara, to take the matter of what Hashem was demonstrating to him to heart. Hamar hazot, ola zen, therefore he sheep ofen sha'amar vishona. And therefore, since he sees, oh, Eliyahu, after I show him all these terrible things might have happened to Bnei Israel, and you're not pleading for them, you're not defending them, you're still saying, take him down, either they're worse. Ooh. So Hashem essentially says to him, I want you to go back and get it's simple pshat is Eliyahu's being fired, but we're gonna see another read potentially on what this looks like. We're going to read quickly through, just focusing on the bold before we go to our Yonah story. So glance back at the beginning of this parak. Achav gets the message back from Izebel that by tomorrow I'll be able to destroy you. He sees it. He perceives it. So he goes running. He realizes, ooh, she's right. Absolutely, I am in danger. So he goes, and this time he realizes, oh my gosh, all of my efforts for nothing, for nothing, for what? And instead of realizing maybe there are other ways to go about it, maybe I have to fix that and get back in the game, he feels done. He feels like I can say, no, I'm not, No more self-improvement, no more working. I'm done here. He goes to the desert to be completely alone, and he asks Hashem, I want out of the game. I want out of the cycle. Please, Ravat Hashem, it's too much. He feels overwhelmed. Well, guess what? A lot of the times when we are working on the same midah or the same mitzvah again and again and again, and we don't see progress, we feel like that too. Sometimes it feels like it's too much. And he says, Hashem, let me out of the cycle. I don't want to keep pushing. And he says, Lo tov anochi mavosai. He tries to say, let someone else do it. He tries to shirk responsibility and say, I don't have to be the one to X, Y, and Z. I'm no better than anyone before me, right? There are others out there. Get a different candidate. He goes and he leans into his despair and he lies down and he goes to sleep. But then we see a malach comes and nogeo bo. It says he touches him. It could have just said that the malach comes and says, food, here's food. But no, first the malach comes and touches him. And this is a good indicator to us that sometimes when we are working on something and it feels demoralizing and it's so difficult, especially when we get into a rut. So we need someone there. We need to make connections where there are people around us socially who can reach out to us for support, for a little bit of encouragement, to just connect to us. So the Malach touches him and he says, get up. The first thing is, you are not allowed to give up. There's no despairing. Pull yourself up. And the next thing is, not only do you have to pull yourself up, but you have to feed yourself, right? Keep pushing through and say, what does it take? If I need to get up, what do I need right now? How can I feed myself? So sure enough, he eats and he drinks and he eats. He lies down, he goes right back, he leans right back into his despair, into giving up, because this is the normal cycle. We don't just fuel forward. There's forwards, backwards, one step forward, two steps back. This is a natural cycle when we are working on ourselves. Well, the Malach returns again. We need our social touches. We need people, whether it's family or friends or a mentor, to reach out to us. And again, when we have not pushed forward enough yet, and we're back in our rut, to come again and to say, no, you got this. Don't give up. Get up. Boom. Echol, you got to eat. And this time, his tshuva buddy says to him, listen, you're going to get up because Rav Mincha HaDerech. You have such a way before you. You have so much you can achieve, right? You have so much responsibility and ability. So feed yourself. Feeding yourself might be food, or it might be listening to a shiur, reading a book, going for a walk, getting in touch with nature, going out, spending time with family, whatever it is that's going to fuel you again to get back on a long journey, right? Because these are not momentary, sudden choice from column A or B. This is a journey. Well, he goes, he fuels himself enough that he's able to travel on that fuel for 40 days and 40 nights. And we know, what is 40 in Judaism? According to the Maharal, it's a remaking, a renewal from scratch, like a fetus is developed to a certain degree after 40 days, 40 days, 40 nights. We know that Har Sinai, of course, 40 days, 40 nights, we're going to recreate the world and Bnei Israel in a Torah-tic way. We know the Mabul, where we are recreating the universe. So 40 days, 40 nights, he travels. This is a journey. The goal is to recreate himself. And he goes all the way, not just to Horeb, to Har Sinai, but he's going to Har HaElokim. He's going to his mentor's house. He's going to visit his mentor. He wants to talk to someone who's going to guide him and mentor him. He knows that I am in this process and it's hard and cyclical and I need help. So he goes to speak to Hashem, his mentor. And he comes to the cave and he lies down, because even each level of push, sometimes again, you go up, you go down again, and it's tough. And he expended so much emotional energy. He's out. So Hashem says to him, okay, let's be introspective here. Hashem says, what are you doing here? What are you looking for? What's really going on with you? And Eliyahu, who's not looking inward yet, right? Like Cain, he's looking outward and he's saying, it's not me. They did this and this and this. So Hashem gives him the whole show and tell. And Hashem hopes that maybe this is going to help him look inward and recognize there's other gentler approaches, but he's not there. Hashem said, say, go out. You need to go out of your mindset for a moment. Like, say me'atz tagmina shelfa. But the going out and seeing the show and tell didn't help him yet. Eliyahu says, it repeats the same thing when he's asked, now, do you have any more insight into yourself? And he repeats, it's them. They did this and this and this. They're the worst. So what Hashem says to him is essentially, he could have just said, go midbara demesek and do and get Chazael and get Yehu and get Elisha. But it says, return to your path, return to your journey. Because the journey's not over. Eliyahu has not yet had his moment. He has not yet reached the next level. He's still in the process. He's working through it. And the truth is, as we see, even for the tshuva coach himself, it's a long, hard journey, a 40 day, so to speak, 40 day, 40 night. It's a remaking systemic of ourselves. So let's look at Yonah. Yonah, we see on the other end. Yonah is looking and he sees people who actually he's able to bring to an instant momentary tshuva. Yonah's gone through the whole process because he knows that they're going to do a quick tshuva. Like Eliyahu, he's going and trying to lie down and go to sleep and tune the whole thing out at the bottom of the boat. But Hashem doesn't let. Hashem first has him taken out all the way from where he is, from his status quo, thrown into the water. He has this moment where he's reconnecting with Hashem, but for some reason it's not enough. There's still something going on with him. So Yonah comes, and over here in Perek Gimel, Daled, Yonah goes and he begins to journey through Nineveh and call out to the people. He says, Od arba'im yon, 40 days, 40 days, v'Nineveh nitapechet, and Nineveh is going to be overturned. You guys have 40 days. Oh, well, and Pasuk Yud. They see this and they're scared. So they do tshuva. The king is terrified. He says, come on, men, women, children, cattle. Everyone has to quickly, quickly, quickly remake ourselves completely. Let's fix everything so fast. Interesting. We saw the same 40 days. He could have just said, Hashem is going to overturn your city. He says 40 days. We got to think about that. We know what 40 days is. So Pasuk Yud, they do tshuva. And sorry, Vayar Elohim es Maaseihem, Hashem sees their actions, ki shavu midarkam, that they returned, they did tshuva from their ways, hara'ah, which were evil, ve'nechem Elohim el-ra, asher diber la'asot lahem v'lo'asa, and Hashem changes his mind regarding the evil he was going to do to them. Doesn't do it. So it sounds like happy ending, story over, case closed, Yonah go home. But no. Now in the next pasuk, there's a whole additional parak just about the aftermath in Yonah. So Vayira el Yonah, ra'ah gdola, vayichar lo. And this was so evil to Yonah, so evil. And he's so upset. We had this word with Cain, and remember, Sparno read it, unfair. When you feel something's unfair, it's unjust. Okay, he's really upset. So what does Yonah think is unfair and unjust? What was upsetting him? Vayitzpalel Hashem, he's davening to Hashem, and he says, oh my gosh, Hashem, this is exactly what I said to you when I was all the way back in Israel. I knew it. I knew before I started to run away that sure, you're very forgiving. And of course, you're just going to change your mind about the evil you do to them. And now, Pasuk Gimel, Va'atah Hashem, kafna es nafshi, take my soul, please, mimeni. Ki tov mosi mechayai, like Eliyahu who says, it's better that I should die than live. He too is despairing. He also wants out. Both of them have just actually successfully fulfilled their Navi mission, which is so rare. When does the Tshuva coach actually succeed in his mission? They both got the people that they were after to do Tshuva, and yet they both want out. Yonah says that's it. I can't deal with it. Pasuk Daled by Yomer Hashem, and Hashem says, Hahetiv Charalach. You're so upset. You're so angry. You feel it's so unfair. Vayetze Yonah min ha'ir. Yonah goes out from the city. And you think at least he's going to go home. This is it, right? Something. But instead of Hashem talking to him more, there's a pause. We're going to have another show and tell. Okay, maybe this is going to give some insight. He goes to sit to the east of the city. He makes this little sukkah. He's sitting under it in the shade. He's sitting till he could see what's going to happen to the city. What do you mean what's going to happen? We already said what's going to happen. Hashem already changed his mind about the evil that's going to happen to them. Look down for a moment to Malbim. Malbim asks our exact question. Why is he sitting to the east of the city to see what's going to be? Hello, Kvar, doesn't he already know? Regretted the evil that he had planned to do to them, that he changed his mind about it? What do you mean? Matudas David and Radak say as follows. As Matudas David phrases it, Ad asher yir'eh, says the Nasi, he chashav, he thinks, Ulai lo ya'amdu b'tshuvasam. Maybe they're not going to stay in their tshuva. Maybe they won't stay. It won't be a really systemic through and through thing. But tachzor hagzer lemkoma. And the decree is going to return to its place. He's waiting out the rest of the 40 days. Radak says, Yashav lo b'makom shehu mizrach la'ir. He's sitting in the east of the city. Ad asher ye'eh. He's until he sees ulai lo yamdu b'tshuvasam. Maybe they're not going to stay having done tshuva v'dashuva gzera lehem. He says exactly like Metzudas David, right? Yonah is sitting and he's hoping. He's like, okay, they did it day one. But what about the rest of the 40 days? We know that one day is not going to create a real tshuva. There's no blue pill or red pill. Ubacharta v'chaim is constant. It's a whole long cycle. Like we said to Eliyahu, shuv l'darkecha, get back on the road, right? You can't pause. You can't give up. Well, there's 40 more days till we could even hope that it's going to be real and somewhat, at least temporarily lasting, long-lasting change. What if I wait it out? Right? It's not fair, he feels, for Hashem to accept the change. There's 40 more days, and we both know it's not gonna stick, right? Not only does Yonah know it's not gonna stick, but what's gonna happen when it doesn't stick? What do we know about, of course, what do we know about Ashur? Ashur is going to come in the future and is going to attack the Israel. They're not gonna stay wonderful and holy. They're going to go back to their evil ways. So why is Hashem not going to wipe them out? Well, let's look at the show and tell that Hashem gives. Hashem says, awesome. Vayiman Hashem Elokim Kikayon. Hashem appoints this Kikayon plant. Vayal me'al leYonah. It grows over Yonah, right? It grows above him. Lehiot Sela Rosha to be shade for him over his head, so to save him from evil happening to him. Oh my gosh, he's so overjoyed about this shade that Hashem sent. And then Hashem sent the next morning. And it cuts down, it bites down that kikayon plant. And it shrivels up. And then it is when the sun is shining. Hashem sends this crazy tough eastern wind. And the sun is blazing on his head and he's boiling. Oh my gosh, he just wants to die. He's begging again to die. And he says again, oh, better I should die than I should live. And Hashem says to Yonah, you feel it's so unfair about the kikayon. You're so angry about the kikayon. And he says, I'm so upset by it. I feel it's so unfair. I want to die. Hashem says, you had pity over the kikayon. You didn't work for it, toil for it, below Gidalto, you're not the one who grew it. Shabin Laila Haya, Uvin Laila Avad, right? Right? Middle of the night, it's there, and then next night it's gone, right? In and out. I shouldn't have compassion. I'll Nimbe over the huge city, Nimbe. Asher Yishbahar Bay, Mishtemes Rebo Adam. that has more than 120,000 people. Which don't know the difference between the right and left, but Hema Rabba and so many people. So Hashem is saying, I know you're waiting out the 40 days. I know that you're hoping I'm going to go back again and be tough on them because they're not, it's not going to be long lasting in tshuva. But look down into Rosh Hashanah. Rabbi Yitzchak, Ain danin es ha'adam. We don't judge a person, ela lafi ma'asin she'osa sha'a, except for their actions at that moment. Just like the pasuk says, by Yishmael, kushama Elokim al kol ha'na'ar ba'asher husham. Hashem listened to the voice of Yishmael that time and saved him for asher husham, because at that moment he was righteous. I know in the future bad things are going to come from saving him, but at that moment he's good. He might not always be good, and his descendants won't, but right now, here and now, he's good. Temporary. What we see here is Hashem says, there's temporary benefit and value to the kikayon. You valued it even though it was here and then gone, and you're so sad it's gone, because it had temporary value. The value can be temporary, it's still valuable. Well, the same with my people, the same with them. They're turning all these people there, and even these animals, they are doing temporary tshuva. You're right, it's not the 40-day, 40-night kind, but I'll take it. How is our tshuva received? What's the minimum tshuva that Hashem's going to accept? Because it's true, the journey is, it's iterative, it's cyclical, it's endless, it's 24/7, and it's hard. We need to call on Hashem's help. We need to keep our eyes on our own plate and our eyes looking forward and keep pushing and pushing and pushing, because if we're not going up, we're going down. And there are going to be times where it feels so difficult, like too much, like Rav, it's too much, the Derech. Well, Hashem says, I will accept. Even if you could do a moment here, a moment there, I'll take it. I'm not going to wait for the 40-day, 40-night kind. That is ideal, but I'll take any bits you could give. And if you flip for a moment to look at the coaching at a glance chart, we see that all three, Kayin and Eliyahu and Yonah, all three of these times when Hashem chooses to coach them personally were situations where they were dealing with potential harm of people, whether it was Kayin who might have harmed Hevel, or Eliyahu who was causing a famine for Bnei Yisrael, or Yonah who was withholding the opportunity for Nineveh to do tshuva and be saved. And there are all different means of intervention that Hashem has with each one: warning and education and hope for Kayin, Malach and food and touch, encouragement, goals, meeting, show and tell, questioning, discussion for Eliyahu, and for Yonah, the Kikayon and explanation. But interestingly, the result of all of these was insufficient progress. Kayin kills Hevel. Eliyahu seems to be unchanged, and Yonah doesn't respond to Hashem at the very end. But we do see that Eliyahu, when he leaves from Hashem and he's told, go back on your journey, he does go on his journey. But Hashem said, go get Hazael, the evil king, to kill out so many people from Bnei Israel, and Yehu to kill out the royal family and also get Elisha. Eliyahu doesn't follow the first two commands of Hashem. He leaves them for later. He pushes it off and says, Elisha, you take care of that. The only one he chooses to do is to go appoint Elisha. And we see that maybe on his journey back that he's continuing, he's starting to hear a little steps. First thing he's doing is, maybe I can work on being a little less harsh. And when Kayin says to Hashem, please, I know I killed him, but such a punishment, such a punishment. Oh, yo, Hashem. It seems shocking why Hashem should care that this murderer is asking for a reprieve. But Hashem says, okay, I'll give you seven generations. Why? Because it's Hashem acknowledging to us that I understand the tshuva process, the process of perfecting ourselves, is very hard, but we can manage it and take it moment by moment.